is WBEN Radio News, including the world tonight and today in business. I'm Lou Douglas. The Buffalo Common Council narrowly approved a new residency law aimed at forcing city employees who live in the suburbs to move to within Buffalo city limits. Excluded under the new law are teachers, sanitation men, policemen, and firemen, plus certain others who receive waivers from the Civil Service Commission. The remaining city employees are bound by the new law. Only about 200 of them live outside the city and now face the decision of moving to Buffalo within 1 year or be charged with misconduct and lose their job. Voting against the law today were council members Charles Volkert, Gerald Whalen, Raymond Lewandowski, and Mrs. Alfreda Slominski. They cited the law's enforcement, which is left to the department heads, and the city's director of labor relations, William Holcomb, himself, a non-city resident. In the Buffalo area today, President William Cufas, one of the American Farm Bureau Federation president, warned today that the nation faces continuing price increases and shortages unless supplies are increased.
The only way we're going to reduce costs to consumers is by increasing the supplies. And the efforts that have been put in here, along with the effort to curb the exports of soybeans, have all been distracting influences as far as the farmer is concerned.
President Cufas of the American Farm Bureau Federation. The state chairman of the New York Republican and Democratic parties traded comments today on alleged attempts to make a deal regarding new judges. Each chairman accused the other of initiating the action. Republican State Chairman Richard Rosenbaum told an Albany news conference that Democrats wanted half the new judgeships being created to combat the state's drug problem. State Democratic Chairman Joseph Crangle in Buffalo said that Rosenbaum's memory is as faulty as President Nixon's regarding the Watergate. Facing deadlines today, the Erie County Legislature approved a measure granting the Buffalo Bills the right to set their own parking fees at the county's new stadium in Orchard Park. The legislature also awarded parking concession rights to multiple services of Buffalo. A Buffalo teenager has been sentenced to a 20-year prison term for killing another teenage boy aboard a bus last December 11th. Erie County Judge Frank Baker imposed the sentence on 17-year-old Ronald McIver. McIver was convicted last month in the stabbing of 16-year-old John Bogomil. The Federal Communications Commission is cracking down on illegal radio operations in the Buffalo area. The engineer in charge of the FCC's Buffalo office, Dennis Coleman, Jr., said that about 100 hams are operating with counterfeit licenses. Coleman adds that about 40 hams with legal FCC licenses are being cited for violating regulations. Coleman said that violations by ham operators are the main cause of interference with television and radio signals. The Erie County Board of Elections reports that 23,391 signatures submitted by the Alliance of Consumers and Taxpayers have been judged to be valid. ACTS, the organization, has called for a referendum or repeal of a Common Council bond resolution for the financing of a proposed downtown convention center. The number of signatures is more than enough to put the matter on the ballot. A final official count must still be made, however. State Attorney General Louis Lefkowitz has lambasted the proposed toll charge for information calls as blatantly anti-consumer. Lefkowitz was referring to the New York Telephone Company's request that the company be allowed to charge customers about 7 cents for every phone number query when that number is listed in the telephone directory. A state public service commissioner examiner has backed the request. Lefkowitz urged the commission to reject the proposal. Now to CBS for the World Tonight with Douglas Edwards.
The Senate Watergate hearings resumed today, and John Mitchell took the stand under protest to tell what he knows about the burglary, the bugging, and the cover-up. Neil Strausser reports.
In his long day of testimony, Mitchell admitted to very little, except some knowledge of the Watergate cover-up. And his purpose, he said, was to keep facts about other operations, such as the Ellsberg psychiatrist break-in, from coming out and thus harming the president's re-election chances. He said he didn't even tell the president, for fear that Mr. Nixon would lower the boom on those concerned and harm his own chances. Mitchell agreeing with Senator Talmadge that he placed expediency above his responsibility to the president.
And did you state that the expediency of the election was more important than that?
Senator, I think you've put it exactly correct. In my mind, the re-election of Richard Nixon, compared with what was available on the other side, was so much more important that I put it in just that context.
It was, otherwise, a day of contradictions, Mitchell disputing particularly the testimony of his former campaign deputy, Jeb Magruder, and former White House counsel, John Dean. He told committee counsel Sam Dash that, contrary to Magruder, he did not approve the Watergate bugging or see the fruits of the operation.
Would you recall Mr. Magruder testifying that he had taken these documents and showing them to you?
I recall it very vividly because it happens to be a palpable, damnable lie.
And point by point, Mitchell disputed John Dean on any testimony that would tie him to an active role in the Watergate cover-up. Dean, he said, may have been confused about people. Neil Strasser, CBS News, Washington.
After Mitchell said that that testimony by Jeb Stuart Magruder was a damned palpable lie, CBS News correspondent Bob Schieffer talked with Magruder outside his office in Washington.
I will stand on my previous testimony that I made in front of the Senate committee under oath. I feel very comfortable with that testimony. I think Mr. Mitchell, who I feel very strongly about personally, he was a wonderful man to work for, and was very good to me personally. He has given his testimony, and I think he has to, of course, give his version of what he remembers from those activities. I gave mine to the best of my recollection, and I stand on my testimony.
Magruder insisted that what he said is true, insisted that he has not told any lies to the committee. The Young Republicans are holding a convention in Atlanta this week, and they seem to be taking Watergate more or less in stride. David Dick has a report.
Watergate does not appear to be an especially dark cloud hanging over the heads of the Young Republicans meeting at this convention. You hear good-natured, even candid joking about it. No nervous laughing, and if there is any hand-wringing, it's not evident. That's not to say there is not genuine concern. And it's taking shape in the Resolutions Committee, which is writing a statement to be submitted to the full convention on Thursday. The gist of the Watergate resolution will be something like this. We are friends of Richard Nixon. We think he's been a good president. The Republican Party is not to blame for Watergate. The Young Republicans are not to blame. And it would be a good idea if the president appeared before some forum, even if it's only a news conference, and submit himself to give and take questioning. A complaint which is heard here among local Republican workers is that the committee to re-elect the president operated too arbitrarily, was too isolated from local Republican contests, and that next time this problem, too, will have to be resolved. David Dick, CBS News, Atlanta.
The World Tonight continues after this commercial message.
President Nixon's lawyer, Herbert Kalmbach, is widely known as the White House fundraiser, but not so much is known about how he doled out funds for Watergate-type projects. This week, Newsweek magazine reveals what it has learned about Kalmbach's financial part in payoffs, cover-ups, secret reports. And Newsweek's cover story this week is all about an explosive new lifestyle that has taken a good part of America by storm. If you don't believe us, look at the cover on Newsweek and nowhere else.
The Agriculture Department released an optimistic report today on the 1973 harvest, including a record wheat crop. Bill Plant has a report from the Middle West.
From the road in McLean County, Illinois, fields planted in young corn and soybeans stretch to the horizon. Everything looks lush and green. But from the air, you can see the large pools of standing water left behind after bad spring weather, where farmers couldn't plant, or if they could, couldn't fertilize properly. That's one reason, according to some farmers, why the Department of Agriculture's optimistic estimates for corn and soybeans may not hold up. The administration is hoping for bumper crops to offset food prices while meeting export commitments, and the Department of Agriculture says 9% more acres of corn will be harvested this year, that the wheat yield will be up 13%, soybeans up 22%. But because of the abnormal conditions, some farmers, like Harold Steele, president of the Illinois Agricultural Association, are skeptical.
The total production, in all probability, will not be to an optimum level that we have experienced in the last few years. I'm still very reluctant to say, yes, it's going to be a great year. There's too many things on the negative side.
With many crops 2 to 3 weeks late this year, everything now depends on continued good weather. Bill Plant, CBS News, Normal, Illinois.
There seemed to be some confusion at the Agriculture Department today, but once the forecast on a bumper crop was out, confusion seemed to go away. Bruce Morton has that story.
A few hours before the crop report came out, Agriculture Secretary Earl Butz told a news conference the department had been wrong about food prices earlier this year and now thought they'd go up 11 or 12% during 1973, leveling off in 1974. After the crop report came out, the department's chief economist, Don Paulberg, told reporters Butz's forecast could be upset by the shape of Phase 4. Lifting the freeze now would raise prices, Paulberg said. But he added that today's forecast of plentiful feed grain should ease inflationary pressures and should encourage farmers to produce more livestock.
We would begin to see more broilers in August, September. We begin to see more eggs September, October. The pork is going to take a while.
Paulberg said increased pork production wouldn't be felt until well into 74, beef late this year or early next. But a plentiful supply of feed grain should, sooner or later, help stabilize retail meat prices. Bruce Morton, CBS News, Washington.
An update tonight on the confrontation last November between police and students at Southern University in Baton Rouge. Two black students were killed in that confrontation, and Louisiana's attorney general said today it was unjustified. He said the police had too many arms and not enough discipline, and that much of the confusion at the time of the shooting was due to human error. A look at the U.S. dollar and the Wall Street Report when the World Tonight continues.
When arthritis, minor pain, and its stiffness flare up, here's Fast Temporary Relief, made especially for you. Deep Strength Arthritis Pain Relief Rub. Call Deep Strength because its strong, concentrated warmth penetrates deep into skin, increases blood circulation over painful area, brings relief for hours. Deep Strength, the modern pleasant-smelling rub. Make sure you get Deep Strength Arthritis Pain Relief Rub from Musterol.
The U.S. dollar strengthened on foreign money markets today, and some experts think it's because government banks are already supporting it or have let it be known that support is just around the corner. Federal Reserve Board joined in this kind of psychology today, if that's what it is. It announced that it's increased available foreign support funds by more than $6 billion. But the board didn't say whether the money is already being used, or if it isn't, when it will be. And stocks closed higher on Wall Street today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed around 888, up 11 points. The average price per share was up 52 cents on the New York Exchange, up 0.10 on the price change index on the American. And that's the financial side of this world tonight. General Weyand presided at the departure of the last American troops from Vietnam, and today he came back to Saigon to assess the situation. Reporters found him reluctant to make a forecast on the future.
We have come a long, long ways in the days of 1968, 69, that I'm personally familiar with, and while it isn't the precise ceasefire and peace that we know will come sooner or later, still we have come a long ways, and we've come here with honor.
How much farther do you think you have to go, General? When will peace with honor be achieved?
Well, I'd be the last person to make a forecast like that.
After looking at the problems in South Vietnam, especially the communist truce violations, General Weyand leaves for Cambodia and to look at that dangerous situation. American planes have bombed targets there for the 126th consecutive day, and Marvin Kalb reports that there is something like despair in Washington.
High officials have switched their line and now say the U.S. is ready to dump Lon Nol and accept a coalition government if that's the price for a ceasefire. This represents a drastic cutback in American expectations. Cambodia was once called the purest example of the Nixon doctrine at work. But it is now clear to the administration that the mixture of local manpower and American weapons has failed to hold off the communist insurgents. In fact, the big question mark at this point is whether the insurgents would accept a coalition. They appear to be so close to victory that officials here suspect they may brush aside all diplomatic overtures, wait for the end to American bombing next month, and then make their big move. The administration, which has virtually ignored the Phnom Penh regime in its quest for a ceasefire, hopes the big powers, Russia and China, will join the U.S. in imposing a settlement. That's a frail hope at best, but as the U.S. diplomatic position crumbles, it's all they've got. Marvin Cal, CBS News, the State Department.
There was an explosion today at an underground munitions plant at Cleburne, Texas. At least four were killed and 35 injured, many of them women. The World Tonight continues in a moment.
Plant something today and watch it grow. Put a little something on a regular basis into United States savings bonds and watch how fast it adds up. The payroll savings plan makes it easy and sure. A little is set aside out of each paycheck before you even see it. And one day, in the not-too-distant future, there it is, a nice nest egg, ready to hatch. Whether it's a great vacation you've been saving for, a new home, education, you name it. Savings bonds can make dreams come true. Take stock in America. Join payroll savings.
The annual Fiesta fever has gripped Pamplona, Spain. The bulls are running through the streets again, and the aficionados and the tourists are risking their lives in the annual joust with fate. My colleague Robert Trout has been going to Pamplona since 1952, and he has a report tonight on how it's changed and how it hasn't.
It was Ernest Hemingway who made the Fiesta of San Fermín the best known of all the revels the cities of Spain put on every year. The city of Pamplona is no longer the isolated mountain town it was half a century ago when Hemingway rocketed to fame with his novel, The Sun Also Rises. This week, they inaugurated a new terminal building at the airport here, and Pamplona's streets are rapidly acquiring the boring international look, with the sprouting on all sides of big box-like buildings of concrete, chromium, and glass. Steel and concrete office buildings are made for work, not to look down on streets in which young men, flourishing leather wine flasks, dance the jota tirelessly day and night. The astonishing thing is how little the fiesta has changed. True, the gardens round the bullring have become a parking lot, but a new generation of waiters still hide away the good chairs at the terrace of the Iruña Cafe when the fiesta begins, just as they did in Hemingway's book. True, one evening this week, the young men, annoyed because the bullfight was bad, let their anger escalate into a political protest. They refused to dance, demanding that the authorities free the men who were arrested during the recent Pamplona strike. But they dispersed peacefully when the police ordered them to, and the next day they were out dancing again. True, not so many of the young men who run before the bulls wear the traditional all-white outfit with red sash and red beret. But they still run, and the bulls are still dangerous wild animals. And they catch unwary lads from many lands who may be wearing cowboy denims and T-shirts imprinted with the word Harvard or Yale or Mortician's University or simply 007. The bulls don't care whether the runners are local boys or visitors from the United States. Souvenir hunters have pried off many of the metal letters from the statue of Ernest Hemingway that now stands beside the bull ring. It seems a long time ago that the sun also rose, but some of its values, as well as its action, have not vanished. Robert Trout, CBS News, Pamplona.
And that's The World Tonight for Tuesday, July 10th. This is Douglas Edwards, CBS News.
A Buffalo weather forecast, variable cloudiness with a chance of a few showers or a thunderstorm tonight. Partly cloudy with a chance of a few showers tomorrow. Buffalo temperature, 79 degrees.